Right, so that's on.
Just regarding all the collections, I saw something that wasn't collections related, but I think it's important I share with you. There's a question I saw during the week I thought was absolutely fantastic. Are you ready for it? Because you know I like stupid questions. Here's a question for you. If you imagine you had 86,400 euros in your bank account. Mm-hmm. I know that'd be nice, wouldn't it? Imagine having 86,400 euros in your bank account and somebody took a tenner on you. Would you get so annoyed that you throw the other 86,390 euros at them?
No.
It'd be stupid, wouldn't it? Mm. Totally stupid. You wouldn't do it?
No.
Absolutely, of course you wouldn't. Coincidentally enough, there are 86,400 seconds in a day. If somebody upsets, annoys, or hurts you for 10 seconds, why give them the rest of your day?
Very good. Very good.
I'm going to enjoy that.
Good, isn't it? And particularly in credit control, you can't get those 10 seconds that upset your whole day.
Oh, no.
No way will we let them in. So it's a great way of looking at it, isn't it? Because there are people out there and there are things that we take on board. You know, and I suppose we know collections is such a difficult job. Guys, just let it off, you know. And, you know, the whole thing about it is, I have found the more angry and upset people are, the more financially embarrassed they are. They're using it as a protection mechanism. So we're better than that. Yeah, so that's the whole point. Right, okay, what I want to do in the next hour or so with you is I'm
give
going
us
to
questions.
Just give you the, copy the exam paper so you can give you practice in a way. That wouldn't be fair. You will have a very clear idea of what the 8 questions are going to be. Is that okay? And the style of the mock paper is very much the style of the real paper. Now, obviously, there may not be the same questions. So, again, in terms of mock paper, this is the mock paper we gave out.
I have them.
So you have them there. Did you?
I'll grab it.
Yeah, absolutely. You have it. Yeah, anybody else have it on you? You'll have it. And you're all very, very organized. Yeah, and there you go. Okay. And again, no trick questions. And the exam paper is going to be exactly the same. And all the questions here are in the notes. And that's something I just want to stress from the start. And I think maybe some of you might have experienced it in the short tests as well. But the short tests and exams, what we are doing, guys, is we are not testing your knowledge. We are testing your knowledge of the notes.
Yeah.
So some questions, people ask the question and they answer the question correctly and they were absolutely right. It wasn't the answer we were looking for because it wasn't the answer in the notes. So, unfortunately, and I hate exams more than anything in the whole world, at the end of the day, it is the only accurate way where if you're certifying somebody that you can certify they do know it. We're all online and we're all impressed with the online stuff. And one of my dreams this summer, hopefully, for those of you who are halfway, it might be a benefit for the rest of you now, you'll have to regret this. I'm going to do more sort of online stuff. And one thing that I have learnt as well, that I may do over the summer, are you ready for this? The fact that I have my little recorder, I might just read the notes into it. Because people hate reading. Yeah? I don't know if they like listening to me, but anyway, I'll edit it as best I can. And sometimes maybe listening is better than reading. So that's a plan I have. So maybe for those of you who have credit management to do next time around, it's just an idea I had. Okay, so that's that. So it is, so in terms of the very first question on the paper, in terms of the role. Now, sorry, just even before I get into the first question, the second question. Very clear, there are 4 modules, 8 questions, so there'll be 2 questions on each module. Is that okay? So And now they mightn't be, you know, the first two questions are module one, the second two questions are module two. They might be mixed up just to confuse you. There will be two questions on each. Is that okay? So at least in terms of, so you can point, you know, in the right direction. So, and there'll be sort of general questions like this in terms of the role of the collector. And if we go to sort of page one or two of the notes, it said this is the role of the collector. Is that okay?
Yes.
So that's kind of, and I'm not going to read the notes for you because you've all done that and you know as well, which is great. Now, question two, the negative words. Did you like that bit about all the negative words?
Yes.
I hope it makes you think. That's what I want. I want you to think. And I know for some people that makes their head hurt. So, the negative words, it has a huge effect. And even on a personal basis, guys, you know, see if we can get rid of as much negativity in our lives as possible. And there's one question that was in the notes when we were talking about words and all that kind of stuff that I really want to reiterate today, and this is more a personal note than an exam note, is the word don't. The minute you catch yourself using the word don't, that tells you now I'm focusing on stuff I don't want. And I guarantee you, 100% of the time, we get what we focus on. So if I am focusing on stuff that I don't want, then I have to get stuff that I don't want. Yeah, so just be careful of that. And credit management, why I've included it in the collections module, is that credit management traditionally is such a negative function. We're talking about overdue debt, we're talking about arrears, we're talking about deadbeats, we're talking about debtors, we're talking about bad debts, we're talking about stuff that we don't want. So what I encourage you to get far better results and to enjoy it a lot more is let's have focus on what we want. So I'm not ringing you about your overdue account, I'm ringing to arrange payments. And if we just change the words and change the questions and change the conversation, you have to change your results. You have to change your results. And if we're focused, as I want you to be 100% of the time, on the money, that's your job to get the money. And if you see the queries and the problems and the copy invoices, and look, we all have to go through that pain. Now, I was at a very interesting meeting yesterday, and this came up as an issue. It was in the construction industry. You're involved in, well, and they found that there are some contractors who are just having a laugh. They want you to give them copy invoices, copies of their contracts, copies of delivery documents, copy of their POs, and do all their admin work for them. So it came up as an issue, and we said, how are we going to do it? Two companies said they wouldn't do it, and one company said, we'll do it, but we'll charge them. Does anybody else charge for copy invoices?
No.
Just thought. Private invoice, as many as you want. Just thought, and these people are getting away with it.
What?
You know, so I just thought it was great. And it cut down, and one company came out looking for 68 copy invoices, and they said, yeah, no problem at all, and, you know, they're going to be a fiver each. And they said, oh, we might have some here, and eventually they only wanted eight. And they knew there was going to be a charge for it. So anyway, that's that. Again, that's just a little speed bump I have to get over to get to the money. Okay, so you need to be focused on the money at all times. And that's why if you get upset by somebody's behaviour, that's an indication you're focusing on their behaviour. And if you listen to what I've been telling you right throughout the whole notes and every time I meet you, we're focused on the money. That's why we're here. And you ain't going to upset me. So the negative words is something that is important as well. So that is that. Now, there is something that you probably need to know in terms of the revision. If the question, and I think this is without exception, if the question is on the mock paper, it probably won't be on the exam. Mm. So now I've just eliminated quite a number of issues. Now, there might be questions similar. Is that okay? So if we look at question five, that says, what is the best way to deal with a customer who won't pay? And I've just told you that question will not be on the exam. Come on, Einstein, work out what the question is going to be. But it's hands or shouldn't, isn't it?
Yes.
So now I've just reduced your work by third. I know you know another question that's going to be on the exam paper. Is that okay? So that's that. Number three here in the... number three is writing a collection letter. Now, okay, we all write collection letters. Now, again, I'm going to change this because I think letters are probably a thing of the past. So we're going to, but what you've learned, I said but, what you've learned I will still stand to you. Because what I want you to do is I want you to take the lessons learned in terms of how to construct a letter, and you might gloss over that and think, yeah, I don't write letters. Emails are letters. Mm. All right. And the more I'm going around, and I'm sure you'll probably bear this out for me, and maybe this is something else I need to change. Would you agree 80% of collections is now on email?
Correct.
It's completely changed, so it's not.
I'd say it's less than that, more over the phone.
I think the phone is, the dependency on the phone is dropping. And it's harder to get people now. People aren't answering their phones and they're never at their desks and they have their answering machines on.
No, everybody has mobile.
Oh, everybody has mobile.
Everybody has mobile. If you get the mobile number, you'll get the money.
Yeah. Unless they save your number into their contacts. And
yeah, but then if they go to a button, you know, just to the extent of saving your number and not answering, then why would they answer your email? Because in there, you know...
Oh, yeah, look. Hey, to me, sorry, I'm a huge fan of the telephone. I think the telephone is the best method of communication. And because telephone is two-way communication, so one, I am communicating and I am listening and I am learning, and I can get a commitment over the phone that I can't in an email. So in terms of my preferred way of communications and collections, my preferred way is the telephone. The thing about it is so many of us have so many customers that we just physically can't get to talk to them all in the course of a day or a month or a week. If some people have a small number of customers, in that case, we keep the personal contact going to a maximum. So I think in terms of emails, so everything that I have told you in the course of letters, I want you to transpose that into emails. So in terms of the structure, so in terms of writing a letter, you could write the most, you know, verbose letter in the world. When we ask a question like that, we're asking for the structure, if you know what I mean. So do you remember we said, put the facts in paragraph one, put the call to action in paragraph two. So that's what we're looking for. So it's not, you know, a wonderful work of literary brilliance. It's follow the trends, the words that you should and shouldn't use. And the one thing that I'll reiterate here today that is so important, in everything that you do from here on, And this relates to dealing with queries as well, that is a part of what we need to do. Always include a deadline on your request. So if you want me, as sales manager, to approve a price query for you, you write to me and say, Declan, can you please approve the attached price query and drop it back to me before 11 o'clock tomorrow morning? Or 4 o'clock on Tuesday afternoon. I don't care. Always. So in your collection emails, when you're dealing with customers, internally, when you're dealing with other departments, even if you get away with your own manager, you know, and you can lie as well as the next person. So look, I have a review meeting on Tuesday at 12. I need to have the answer for them. Whether you do, you don't, it's your business. So I'm encouraging you to tell lies to you, as long as you get away with them. So that's that. Always include a deadline. Always include a deadline. And I even do that at home. I've got four boys at home. And any time there's a request, can you empty the dishwasher? You know? It's followed by, look, whenever you get a minute, can you empty the dishwasher? No problem, no panic. Mom's not home till 4. As long as it's done when she gets in, I don't care if it's never done. Yeah? And I walk away. That would be done by 4 o'clock. Yeah?
So even though it might sound innocuous enough and nice communication, the communication only works. If you say to me, can you look after this account? Oh, yeah, I'll do that for you now as quick as I can. Yeah, that could be a month. So, look, we need that. And need, I don't know if I specify that word as a good word in the notes. Need is a great word. We need that in by Friday. We need that by the end of the month. We need that here. Need is a great word. People respond to needs, not wants. I wonder what they want. Has anybody played with the idea of, so what do I want? That was in the word section. Or did it just get lost in the overall text? Well, reread it again. Because I'll tell you something, and this is now, I'm going away from the exam script here as well, actually, it probably shouldn't. Guys, I guarantee you, the more times in a day you ask the question, so what do I want, the better that day will be. Is that okay? And I mean, you come in the morning, before you sit down, I spend time on my own in the morning, because I have to. And part of the process, before I do anything, this is the first cup of tea in the morning, so what do I want today? What do I want to achieve today? Why am I going into the office now? What are the four things I have to do? What do I need to do? What do I want to do? What would be important to do? What? And not everybody does that. So part of make a list, and I encourage you to make lists. Now, the downside of a list is that we become sort of compulsive list ticker offers. And we end up doing stuff just to get them off the list, whether it's very important or relevant or whatever, but it just makes us feel good crossing stuff off the list. So as long as the list then is prioritised into the level of importance, then that's fine. You should go to work in the morning with a mission. I'm going in, I want to get this done, I want to get this sorted, I want to get this done. And you know, it just makes you feel good then at the end of it, saying, yeah.
Well, I've tidied my desk.
Great.
Since I started.
Yes. You can't.
Because I can find nothing.
And you frustrate yourself then, because you're going through and you're spending 10 minutes every hour looking for stuff, and you're, and because you're great at beating yourself up. So let's not do that. So working on, and I know it's a female male divide, and just looking around, it's only you and me, so I won't include you in the argument. I'm going to be a champion of unitasking, where you just do one thing at a time. Do it, finish it, next. Do it, finish it, next. Do it, finish it, next. If you're on the phone updating cash and a spreadsheet at the same time, your brain is just split between four things, and you'll sort of have to. So anyway, so that's that. Revisit that question, so what do I want? I might do a separate thing on it. It's more in personal development now than collections. It's brilliant. It is absolutely brilliant. It's magic.
Could that turn up in the exam?
It couldn't. No. No. No, this is for your own personal benefit. Okay, so collection letter, so I say we're going to email. So the content, so I say the punchline and all that kind of stuff, and then the words that you don't use. So if you start a collection letter or a collection email, saying I am writing to you, that would upset me right from the very start. Is that all right? So, and I've seen those kind of letters too. Now the communication styles. Now, I don't know about this. So I reread the role, I kind of got a bit carried away in shadow personalities and all that kind of stuff, and I'm sorry if I bored you. It was just something I was doing at the time and I was fascinated with it. So in terms of an exam question, we're not going to ask you what are the shadow personalities of whatever, so it's not going to be specific questions. But in terms of the four communication styles, the auditory, that's kind of a banker, if you like. But it's in general terms, are you with me? So it's not going to be a specific question on whatever. It's going to be, what are the four styles, or how would you communicate, or whatever. And again, if you incorporate this into the day's work, it can be very rewarding. And I just even play a game with yourself. The next time you pick up the phone, say, I wonder, can I work out what which of the four they are. And once you set out that intention, and that's, so what do I want? So by asking the question before you pick up the phone, so what do I want? Yeah, I want to pay my day for the money, and I want to find out what sort of communicator they are. And you'd be amazed once you find out, oh, he's a visual, or he's a whatever. And once, and what would happen is, and again, did ever do anything online to check yourselves?
Yeah,
and the personality ties as well. It is good, isn't it?
Very good, yeah.
So that's that. What you will find is that the people that you don't like are the people who are the opposites to you. And once you know and understand that, sure, that's an INJT, how would you expect to be any different? Yeah, that's how they are, go on. Yeah? Look, they're a visual person, and through the role plays as well, you saw, do you remember the shopkeeper and the assistant? You know, so one was just so probably digital in terms of show me the guarantee, and the shop said, no, wait, let's show you the picture, and you know, and you can just see the visual, and they can't communicate. It's like a different language. And if you're having difficulty communicating with somebody, it's either they are the opposite personality type to you that you now understand, or they have a different communication style to you. And what my recommendation is in the real world is that the very best communication style that you can adopt is to be a chameleon. So if you're visual, I'm visual. If you're chatty, I'm chatty. If you're abrupt, I'm abrupt. Hello, how are you? Great, how are you? What do you want? 840 euro. Yeah? And I'd even mimic their style without sort of appearing to be American and, you know, have a nice day kind of, you know, contrived because people will see you as well. Is that okay? So certainly I would revisit the thing, particularly on the four communication styles more than the personality types. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
And as if you can do it, do you know it's a great time to do it if you're into this sort of stuff? And one thing that I used to do, my idea of hell is being invited to my wife's Christmas work party. You know, because one, you can't drink in case you make a show of her. Two, you don't know anybody there. And three, she knows everybody in the room. So you're just like a bloody Egypt standing there, you know, afraid even to have a drink in case you do something wrong. So that's like, so to me, that is the most awkward of all social situations. And to keep myself amused, I just play this game. Now, obviously, I don't tell them or they have me locked up. But see how many people, just by talking to them, can I work out what personality style they are? Yeah, I go, hello, how are you? I'm actually good. Just listen. And if you really listen to what they're saying to you, it's a great help track. Great crack. So anyway, it just keeps me amused when she's off, you know, chatting to other people and ignoring me. Yeah, anyway, that's not it. So yeah, so the communication styles, so that is definitely that. And maybe building rapport with them might come into it as well. So that's that. The best way to deal with customer who won't pay. So yeah, so won't pay we won't deal with because you dealt with that in the mock exam. Mm-hmm. So when we're dealing with won't pays, the answer to that question is consequences, isn't it? In one word, it's consequences. So they won't pay. So as long as I can persuade you that, you see, all I have to do in collections, if you want anybody to do anything for you, is to persuade them they'll be better off by doing it than not doing it. But you have to convince them that they will be better off. It's not for me. Remember that. So if I can convince you you'll be better off by doing it than not doing it, you'll do it of your own free will. Right? So in terms of won't pays, so if we have a consequence, so be it stop supply, be it, you know,
Suspension of services.
If it's, you know, legal action, debt collectors, you know, late payment interest, there's a whole list of consequences that you can. And now I have to do the sums. So either I pay this on Friday or I get hit with an interest bill. Now, speaking of which, I never know what I tell people or I don't tell people. This is going off script for the exam. Just to let you know, anything that you can do on a repetitive basis in your office, being the sad person I am, I probably have a spreadsheet for it. Is that okay? So if it's stuff like calculating late interest, I have a spreadsheet to do that for you. So would you just ask me? So just send me an email saying, can you send me the late payment interest calculator? And I put an awful lot of work into it. Like, I have all the European Central Bank interest rates since 2002, that when you put in the invoice dates, it will find out what the right interest rate was and add 8% to it. So it'll do all the sums for you, and it'll add the admin fee for, you know, under 1,000, under 10,000, over 10,000, and give you a final figure. Yeah, so then we're talking about consequences. I love that consequence, and so many people don't use it. So if there's a brat there who's been ignoring you for the last 6 months or 8 months, and you can't get through, and you're sending letters, and you're ringing, and you're doing all sorts of stuff, do you know what you do? You just fill out the details on the spreadsheet, send them a bill for 2,500 for interest, and watch the reaction. What's this? He's talking to me. It's interest. Chance there 2 years. Yeah? Oh, I'm not paying interest. Okay, well look, it's fair enough. Look, here's the deal. It's £5,000 on the account for the last 2 years. Pay me the £5,000 before next Friday, and I'll cancel the interest. Don't pay me on Friday.
Interest.
So if I have the check on Friday, collect the interest, I'll set it in full. If we don't have the money here on Friday, then the interest will stand. Can you see how from a won't pay, that's a consequence, now I have to make up my mind. Am I better off by paying it or not paying it? And if I think I'll get away with it, I might chance my arm. And then if I say that, I will do it, and I will still net the full amount of the interest. So it is a consequence. The other two types of customers that we have, the ones who can't pay, so they're the people who have no money. Yeah? So again, with those we need to negotiate, and we need to come up with payment plans or payment options or installments or whatever we do. Lads, we get something rather than nothing. You know, that's my, has always been my way of doing business. Get something rather than nothing. And then the third type are the shouldn't pays. So the shouldn't pay, and my definition of shouldn't pay, is when you have done something wrong. Okay? So if you have not sent out an invoice, or you have sent a wrong invoice, or you haven't put a PO number, or you haven't put a, you know, sent it to the right office, or sent it to the right company, or whatever. So if you have done something wrong, and the gas thing about it is, 60% of the reasons you're not getting paid are probably shouldn't pays, where you or somebody in your organisation is making a mess of it. Yeah? Mm-hmm. So, part of that, and for those of you who did credit management, I think you did credit management, you know, we have a whole section on getting it right first time, which is one of my hobby horses as well. If we get it right, life is easy. Get it wrong, life is hell. Okay, but for the moment, it's just to be aware of it. Is that okay? So, and coming back to our can't pays then as well, I would certainly look more to, you know, it's just establishing with them, you know, like in terms of negotiations, and I know we cover negotiating skills, let's start. You got the stuff, we provided the service. You have to pay. That is non-negotiable. You have to pay. Now, if you say, oh, times are tough, things are hard, and I haven't got any money, okay, now we'll enter into negotiations with you. Okay? Now, again, if it's a, you know, depending on the amounts involved and whether it's within your pay grade or whatever, I'm not sure, I will start the negotiation process and say, well, what can you do? And when you're negotiating, always get them to show their hand first. That's how, you know, when you're talking to a customer, never, ever, ever come up with an idea. Say, or even remember I said about payment plans and payment options. If I mention the word payment plan, I have just got rid of all possibility of getting paid in full. It's gone off the table. So look, you know the 22,000 here, yeah. And back to my favourite question. So how are you going to clear this? Hell, love hell. Love the question. Because hell has the solution. There is a solution. If I say, how are we going to do this?
What I'm telling you is there is a way of doing it, we just have to find it. So how are we going to clear this? And what I'm also doing is, I'm not taking their problems. If you've got a problem and you can't pay, that's fine. How are you going to solve this? Now, I'll help you. It's your problem. I'm not taking your problem. Oh, well, let's see if I can come up with a plan. It's not my business to come up with a plan. It's you to come up with a proposal, and then it's up to me to either accept it or to enter a counter proposal. And if we do that, we'll be successful in everything we do. And I know we're talking about negotiations in a collectionist perspective. I have 4 sons, I have to negotiate to get to the bathroom in the morning. You know, sometimes because I'm the dad, that's why it works. Is that okay? So you might have a clue in terms of question 5, what that might look like. So conducting negotiations, again, the best way to conduct negotiations, there is a step-by-step method in the notes. Now that you've done it on the mock test, so you can forget that completely for the exam. It's all right, because the same question won't be there. Liquidation. So the 3 types of liquidations. Now, if you answer that question, just not to get confused, the 3 types of liquidations are the members voluntary, the voluntary creditors voluntary winding up, and then the court. Is that okay? And then so that's in terms of is. But we covered more than just liquidations. We covered 3 types of insolvency as well, didn't we? So we covered liquidators, receivers, and examiners. Yeah. So on that basis. So if we're talking about what are the 3 types of liquidations, you know what they are. If we're talking about the 3 types of insolvency, now you know what they are. Is that okay?
Yeah.
And you might need to know that.
Yeah.
liquidators, examiners, then?
And receivers. Now, just to give you the heads up on that. So, in terms of the 3, the job of a liquidator, and if you take the word literally, the job of a liquidator is to liquidate the company. Their job is to turn all the assets into cash, yeah, and to distribute that among the creditors. So a liquidator is there to wrap up the company. And in company parlance, that is the death of the company. So all a liquidator can do is come in, wrap it up, wind it up, walk away. Okay, that's what a liquidator does. A receiver, their job is to receive an asset. So if I have a charge over an asset of the company, so this is, I have a charge over this telly, so that telly is mine. It's been worked in the business, I have a charge over that asset. Banks can have charges over the property, over the, you know, equipment or whatever. So if a bank has a charge over an asset, so we give you $100,000 of a loan, you pay back $2,000 a month, and blah, blah, blah. So they have a charge over whatever asset they have. If they fail to make the payments, the bank have the right to put a receiver into the company who will just take over the running of the company. And their job is to get the $100,000 back for the bank. That's all they do. So if they have to sell stuff, let people go, close it up, whatever, my job as a receiver is to, the bank have appointed me as a receiver, I have to get that $20,000, $50,000, $100,000 again. That's all I have to do. And part of my role is, I can decide when I arrive into the company, my job is to get the $50,000, what's the best way of doing it? And if I think closing it down, I will close it down. If I think keeping it going, I will keep it going. Now, these guys are pretty ruthless. They are there to get the $50,000.
That's
a receiver.
Well, what if this, like, say, the bank have appointed them as a receiver, and then there's another secured, say, like, the bank is owed $100,000 secured debt, and then there's another company that's owed another $50,000.
Yeah.
Would the receiver not cover, be trying to approve the debts for both companies?
No.
Company, or just
bank? Yeah. Okay. Now, if you know, if I had a charge and I found a receiver was appointed to a company, I had a charge, I'd probably put in another receiver, you know, so, but it charges in a liquidation situation rank in order of which they are filed.
Yeah.
So in a liquidation situation, so if you registered your charge on the 1st of January and I didn't register my charge till the 5th of April, if a liquidator was appointed, you would get your money first. And if there's money left over, then I would get it. If there's not, you'd get it. The receiver is for that specific company and that specific, it's a debenture that he's appointed on foot of. That's what he does. Maybe if the bank had two or three debentures, he'd probably go in on foot of the three. But if there's two different companies, because just if we see collections is a competition, it's a race. So it's who gets in there first. So a lot of people confuse receivers and liquidators because sometimes companies do close in receivership and sometimes they do wind up as a result. It's not as a result of the receivership. He goes in and finds there isn't 50 grand there. So then it has to wrap up. Now the examinership is a different animal altogether. What happens in this country, give you another little history lesson as well. What happened in this country was there was very clear laws that said that if a company is insolvent, and you may have done this in company law, and if a company is insolvent, they have to cease trading. So if you cannot pay your bills as they fall due, and the company has a negative asset, the company must go into liquidation. Under company's law, since the foundation of the state, that has been the law. So if I come into the office someday, and something's gone wrong, and we add up our creditors and debtors, we can't pay our bills, we add up our assets and liabilities and we owe more than we own, then I have to, by law, wrap up the company. Okay? And if I don't, then I become personally liable for the debts of that company because I am now trading fraudulently. I'm trading in a company that can't pay its bills, is insolvent, and now I'm personally, so I must wrap up the company. Is that alright? Here's another history lesson for you. A number of years ago, there was a man called Charles Haughey. And Charles Haughey had a friend called Larry Goodman, who was still around and one of the biggest players in the media industry in Ireland. So if he's still alive, I can't say. You can't defame the dead, you know. So you can say that in your life, somebody is dead. There's no slander or rules. But somebody who's alive, there is. So I have to say nice things about Larry Goodman. So Larry Goodman was the head of the Irish, and still is, the most biggest person in the meat industry in Ireland. He controls the whole beef industry in the country. He went and did a number of deals in the Middle East, and with the troubles in the Middle East, it dried up. And lo and behold, Goodman was insolvent. The company was insolvent, and under Irish company law, the company had to wind up. But if the company wound up, every farmer in the country would be high and dry, the country's greatest export was beef. Haughey couldn't let that happen. So being the resourceful man that he is, who's much maligned now in history, and he got his cronies together and came up with an idea, let's have an examinership. Yeah? And what an examinership says is, hold on, the company is insolvent. So up to now, it should wind up and be liquidated. We're going to add another proviso into that equation, and here it is. That if a company has massive debts that they can't pay, and here's the proviso, and they are trading profitably, so if they could get rid of the burden of debt that's hanging around them, and they could keep the business going, let's give them a way out. And what an examiner will do is, an examiner will arrive into the business. The first thing is, an examiner is appointed by the court. So I have a company, it's insolvent. One of the most recent examinerships was Pamela Scott's, you know, the fashion shop on Grafton Street. So they got into arrears with rent and they were up to their eyes in debt. So they went to the court and said, court, look, we have all this debt here that we'll probably never get to pay. We have a good business, there's our turnover figures, there's our profit figures. So we have a viable business going forward if we can manage the debt. So
So if I can convince the judge that, look, there is a chance of salvaging it here, the judge then will grant permission to appoint an examiner. Mm. Is that okay?
Yeah.
The examiner comes into the business, and their job is to come to a deal with the creditors. That's his deal. So he gets the list of creditors, so they owe 100 million. They only have 10 million in assets. Okay? So they will go to you and say, look, I am the examiner for ABC. They owe you 10 grand. We'll give you one in full and final settlement. Right?
You can choose to accept it or...
You can choose to accept it or reject it.
If you reject it?
Well, if you reject it, it's a democracy. So if you, so each creditor has a choice whether they accept the scheme arrangement or reject it. I can't remember the percentage. I think it's if 80% of the creditors accept it, then if you're on 20%, it's tough. It's being accepted by the creditors. If it's rejected, you see, by rejecting it, the only option, by rejecting the examinership proposal, is liquidation undergone. So you might think, well, why will they accept 1,000 on a debt of 10? Because if you don't accept 1,000, you'll probably get nothing. So you have to weigh it up and think, look, if I reject it, not only do I not get my 10 grand, I get nothing, and my customer is gone. Yeah, whereas if I accept, at least get 1,000 off the 10 grand, and I get it back, it's another 2,300. And I have a customer. Now I keep them on a tight leash, I'm not stupid. So that's that. So the examinership is sort of a halfway process. So their job is to come in and negotiate. Now obviously the negotiating powers are different. You know, like when he goes negotiating with a bank saying we give you 10 cents in the euro, the bank will say, look, go and get knotted. We have a charge on the asset, and why would we accept a penny less? So we might have to pay the secured creditors in full and the unsecured creditors or whatever. But if they can come up, and in the Pamela Scott's case, the thing that saved them was they could renegotiate the rent with the landlord. Because what was killing them was the rent on Grafton Street was huge. So they went into the landlord and said, look, you have a very good tenant here, they owe you this, if we can drop the rent to that, they'll be able to pay you and, you know, whatever. So that's where it works. But it came from Goodman, so probably no harm to know that. So it is a halfway house. So the idea, now there is two big differences that you need to know, and you might need to know this for the exam as well. It's this: if I am appointed as liquidator to a business and I decide how I'm going to get most for the group, so as a liquidator my focus is on getting as much as I can for the creditors. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
So if I decide I will get more, so I take over a hotel, if I close up this hotel and it goes idle, I'm only going to get the real estate value for it, whereas if I keep the hotel open, then I might get a buyer and I might make more money as a going concern. If I do that, when the liquidator is appointed, then they become personally liable for any debts that they incur from the moment of their appointment. Are you with me?
Mm-hmm.
So some people don't, or a company goes, and the receiver is exactly the same. So if a receiver arrives in and says, look, I'm going to keep this place going until I get my 50 grand. So he might say, look, there's a desk book there of 100 grand. I just have to sit at the desk and wait for the money to come in, and when the 50 grand is in, I'm gone. Yeah? Nobody gets paid now while he's there, until he gets his 5+. Okay? So that's, you know, that's the distinction there. So an examiner is liable. So if the examiner decides to run the business, he is liable for whatever debts. And I'm saying he, because I don't think there is a female liquidator. I don't know if that's a female liquidator, which is funny, because... You know, there's more females in accountancy practices than whatever. Anyway, that's not good. So that's that. So they become liable. What I would do in the real world is, if a company, say, you know, National College of Ireland went into receivership, I would close the account that I had, and that's obviously a potential bad debt. I would open a new account for National College of Ireland in receivership and continue to supply the receiver.
So wait, just to... make sure I have this clear. So an examiner would be liable for any debts.
No, that's what I'm saying.
So a liquidator would be.
Yeah, a liquidator is liable for the debts.
For
a receiver is liable for debts. an examiner is not liable.
Okay.
So if you continue to supply a company in examinership, you are increasing your exposure to them. So that is fine. Now you can get them to sign a form 14 or something. I don't know, is that in the law module over there, or is it in here? I'm not sure. So there is a form you can get them to sign to make them personally liable. By right, they are not liable. Okay, so that's that. So if you know the difference between the three, what a receiver is, what a liquidator is, and what an examiner is, and their different roles and responsibilities, that could be important. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because so many people get confused with that. Okay, so that's that. So negotiations is question six. There's probably a subsection, and maybe this is one of the most obscure of the questions. I think it's a subset of the negotiation skills. Is there a very short chapter on face-to-face meetings?
There is.
I'd read that again if I were you.
For negotiations?
No, just for face-to-face meetings. I think it's in the negotiation sections. So there's a section on face-to-face, and there's some rules. And rules are great. You see, from an examiner perspective, if there's 10 rules for face-to-face meetings, or I can't remember how many. So if there's 10 rules, like that makes my job of correcting papers so easy, because you just take the 25 marks and divide by 10. So that is that. It was at the end of a chapter.
What?
Face-to-face meetings, yeah, page 41 in module 3. So here are the rules, and there are 10 of them. Yeah? Might be no harm to know those 10.
All 10?
Ah, sure, you might as well. You know? So that is that. So let me see. So the best way to conduct negotiation, that's that. Liquidation, I have done that. There is a part on so stress. I put that in. No, there'll be no such question on the real exam paper. So those sort of stress things and all that, that's just to help you to cope with your job better. Because I know credit work can be stressful. So no, there is nothing about that picture. There is one though, and this is probably a departure between the departure between the mock paper and the real paper. There is, and I got into a little bit of legalese, and again, not to get bogged down with the detail, but in terms of what I would know from an examination perspective, the area I would look at is data protection.
Data protection,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Now again, look, I know I go into maybe too much details in terms of how much the forms are and all this, so you don't have to learn the minutiae detail of it, but you would need to know, you know, the main rules for data protection. And also, the clever ones in one way will say, oh, but Declan, is there a new data protection legislation? And watch this, is going to be terrifying. Coming in May next year, I'll keep you informed about that too as it comes. There's two huge things coming down the road on us. One is new data protection legislation, and the other is in the area of money laundering and terrorist financing. So they've linked money laundering and terrorist financing together just to make it a motive. Is that okay? And just to give you the heads up, I'm going off script, 3 minutes to go. Going off script, but this is important. Up to now, if you work in a bank or a credit union or a building society, and somebody arrives in with 10,000 quid in cash to lodge it, right? You have to report it to the revenue commissioners, yeah, the Declan Flood came in with 10 grand in cash. And that's all you have to do, you just have to report it, and you've done your job. And then obviously I have to account for where I got the 10 grand from. All right? So, and that has been the law for years. The new anti-money laundering and terrorist financing is if you get 10,000 in cash from any buyer in a 1-year period,
you have to report it.
Oh my God.
So if you're doing cash on delivery and you're giving 300 quid a week, in cash for deliveries that you're making to, yeah, then when we get to September, I have to report that I've got 10,000 in cash from that person. Is that all right? So it only relates to cash payments, but from next year onwards, it's going to be cumulative over the year. It's going to be a nightmare. Can you imagine selling to the chippers and fruit shops and restaurants and, you know, all that kind of business? So it is. And here's the thing, guys. You know, this is, you are personally on the hook. If you've taken 15,000 from somebody and you don't report it, you personally are the one who's committed the offence. So look, that's kind of important. Anyway, we're not getting into that. Just data protection. So in what?
Main rules of data protection.
Main rules, yeah. And again, I suppose if you want to be even more specific, as well as the rules, the rights of the individuals. You know, so what right do you have as an individual under data protection? Is that okay? So stress is not going to be an issue. Coming back to the first module as well. One thing that I really like, so obviously you're subject to my likes and dislikes as well. You may have skipped over an area in financial literacy called the concept of matching. Find that, if you would, and understand it.
The concept of matching.
Matching. It was module one. Yeah, it was right at the very start. So matching, and what I mean by matching, so it's in the consumer credit, which is probably of very little interest to you guys. It's where you match your repayment with the duration of the asset. I guarantee you, if you follow those rules, you will never get into financial trouble, either from a business perspective or a personal perspective. So what I'm saying in matching is, look, if I buy a car and it's a new car, you know, finance that. If you're going to get 5 years out of that car, pay for it over 5 years. Of course you do. By paying for it up front, you're starving yourself of cash. You're going to, you won't be able to go to the pub for the weekend because all your money's gone in the car. If the car's going to last 5 years, pay for it over 5 years. If a house is going to last you 20 years, pay for it over 20 years. Okay? If a holiday, well, you might want another holiday next year. So the good idea is to pay back the holiday within the year, and then I'll have another one next year. Whereas if I pay for my holiday, get a 5 year loan to pay for a holiday, I'm dragging myself into debt. So, and businesses who get into cash flow problems. I was with a business only 2 weeks ago. Cash flow problems, cash flow problems, cash flow problems. And I went to them and said, everything looks well, what's going on? And then I noticed, I said, hold on, you have a whole load of new equipment there. Oh yeah, I got that a few months ago. And how'd you pay for it? I paid for it. Just pay for it. Why did you pay for it? It'll last you 5 years. Yeah, we'll pay for it over 5 years. And he strapped the whole business for cash to a point where he's nearly going out of business now, because he hasn't enough money to pay his suppliers. And he's these machines that the last 5 years pay for. Like, don't be stupid. Like, let's use credit properly. So, and even though the consumer credit, you might think that's not relevant to me, you are consumers of credit, so I hope that you would. Is that okay? And then finally, we move back to chapter one. And I'm not even sure if it has a place in a collections course. Hell, it seemed like a good idea at the time. I did put in an account application form, didn't I?
You did, yeah.
Yeah, just to show you where we start the process. I probably have a very close look at that.
I missed that last bit completely. I was still writing down about the concept of matching.
The concept of matching. So the new account application form. Is that okay? So have a look at that and know the questions you ask and why you should ask them and all that kind of stuff. So just, because if we get that bit right, everything else falls into place. Is that okay?
Sorry, if there are no questions to ask.
Yeah, so, because I said I would give you the exam, but like, what's a application form?
What's on
the application form? Exactly. So you just know what's on it and why.
Yeah. The reasons why.
And the reasons why.
Yeah.
So, and if so, so she'll show that she knows something about that. So, if you've done your homework correctly, I have given you all 8 questions. Now what you have to decide is which are your 4. What I would probably do is I would probably pick 5 or 6, well maybe 5, just in case there's a stinker of a question on one of your chosen products that you don't like. So the 4 areas that you specialise in, the 1 area in reserve, and then you wing it. I don't know whether I said earlier, because I keep forgetting what I said, if you can answer 5 questions, answer 5 questions. No rush, half an hour per question. I'll give you time checks on the exam. If you have time to do a fifth, and we'll correct it. And so in 2 weeks' time, we're room 203 over the other side of the building. And if you need anything in the meantime, you know where I am. And I hope now you're more relaxed leaving today, are you?